Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
name? Yes, show number. I forgot. I have to look it up. You'll have to bear with me. Just trust me. It's a lot. Anyway, good evening. Good evening. Welcome. As we get ready to get down with the chefs, courtesy of everybody here at Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. Let me say happy birthday to my sister in love, Eileen Perry Ingram. Happy birthday, Meanie. Love you, sis. Y mucho, mucho más and all the other good stuff. Anyway, having said that, let's go to work. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassin of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now, or should I say, right now, got to roll those R's, at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to all the members of the Brother Man Network, wherever they may be. Radio Reggie, languishing in Richmond, Virginia. Professor Fred Witted in North Kakalaki, somewhere around Fayetteville in the smokehouse. Pat Freeman, the mighty Obad, doing as Obad do. Got some late information on the bullshit in Buffalo and that tragedy therein, and others when they decide to pop in. Now, before we get started, a little PSA, courtesy of Soul Tree Radio and The Raw. Now, y'all know when Joe Namath and J.J. Walker get on and talk about their money and all that bullshit when they're trying to tell people, you know, call up and get more money off your Social Security, they're full of shit. The reason they're full of shit is because this line is not affiliated with Social Security, per se. You know, the number they tell you to call, it's a clearinghouse with agents on it to try to get you to sign up for life insurance. Now, if you want all that, then have that. But be forewarned, the number is part of the fine print that they show at the end of the thing. When they tell you, I get more money back for my Social Security plan. No, they don't. No, this number has nothing to do with Social Security. So please, do not listen to what these motherfuckers say. I can't tell you more than that. All I can say is they're not giving you all the information you need. You know, someone's trying to sell you something. And every time there's fine print, you know there's something to piece through. So anyway. Yep. This has been a public service from Soul Tree Radio and The Raw. Yay! Us.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for bringing it to the attention.
My right-hand man, bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray. Gee, I was so tired of seeing that fucking commercial. I'm still tired of seeing it. And every time I hear Jimmy Walker, I'm going to smack him up the head with saying, Dynamite!
This is what you're after. You're after people 65, 75.
Yeah.
Why? Because they become disabled. And when you become disabled, you need it. See, it's all a game.
Yep. Scam. Oh, scam. It's exactly right.
Yeah. I like that.
In addition to that, we're going to talk about one of the most important aspects of team sports, and that is matchup. You know, matchups are what lead to players having good games as opposed to bad games, great careers as opposed to good careers, or being a Hall of Famer or being questionable. Our colleague, Patrick Farrar, had some great insights on that, and we'll hear from him somewhere around 45 minutes after the hour. But in the meantime, what's on your mind, G?
Michael, people, I want you to pay attention to what is going on in Washington, D.C. Here's the thing. This Friday, is the 50th year anniversary of Watergate.
Right.
We have not learned anything this Watergate. Let me Richard Milhouse Nixon, if he had one more year in the White House, he would have became King Richard. Right?
Uh-oh. Go ahead.
King Richard. You hear what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Here we come 50 years later. Donald J. Trump tried to save BS. And if it wasn't for Mike Pence, we'd be seeing King Donald, okay? See, this, look, let's be real.
Mm-hmm.
The people in power want certain people in power.
That's true.
Donald J. Trump and Richard Nixon are the same. Different errors, but they're the same.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they the same? Because they hate the same people, okay? They don't see anybody but themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the United States of America has to stop thinking these idiots to be president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, straight up, you gotta stop being an idiot doing this. Look, you know what Donald Trump is about. You voted for him anyway. What's wrong with you?
It's not so much what's wrong with them, G. It's what's wrong collectively with everybody. I think the biggest difference between Nixon and Trump is that Nixon was afraid to try to do what Trump did. You know, he was never really somebody that was well-liked. And when he did run, everybody knew he was a racist, a redneck. He didn't like black folks, all that shit. And the fact that he lost to Kennedy in a very close election with everybody who was out of the loop, Catholics, Jews, black people, women, all of that, saw Kennedy's face and saw Nixon's face. His little jowled ass was shit out of luck. And it's a good argument to say that because Kennedy was a little more telegenic than Nixon was, he got elected. You know, not because...
Michael, the Donald Trump... See, this is what makes me angry about this.
All right.
You would sell your soul to this devil.
Yeah.
Instead of picking Hillary Clinton, which, we understand what Hillary Clinton. But you can work with Hillary Clinton. You could not work with Donald J. Trump. And that episode tells me all I think about America. And they will do it again, Mike.
They may do it. I would say they may try to do it again. We got our brother Tony McClain with us, but there is a distinct difference. I mean, Donald Trump is totally immoral. You know, Nixon might have had the desire to do it, but see, other people told him what time it was, and he said, all right, I got to piss on the fire, call the dogs, blah, blah, blah. Between all the people in your core group saying you lost. G. You know?
That's right.
You lost. All your boys said, you lost. You know, call it a fucking day. You made enough money on the back end. You know, you stole as much as you could possibly steal. You tried to cheat as best as you could cheat. And even all of that, all of it was stopped by one person who had a moment of ethics, intense. So
yep.
Shut the fuck up and let it go. He refused to let it go. Tony, what say you on this madness?
Well, the Nixon and Trump comparisons are always interesting, but even as ass backwards as Tricky Dick was and still is, and you cannot dismiss the war, his war on black people disguised as the war on drugs.
Yes, Lord.
Exactly. You're right.
But in that same vein, it's weird. Think of the relationship Nixon had with Russia as opposed to the relationship 45 had. You know, he gave them his due, but he never handed the country over to them. Therein lies the big difference. And, you know, he opened up talks with China as well.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta look at it. I mean, look, again, I am not here. I am not grabbing pom-poms for Richard Milhouse Nixon. No. Anybody that even thinks that, I will slap you and your mama on Easter Sunday in a three-piece suit. But that being said, I mean, you know, even as bad as whatever Watergate was, it never, you know, there was never a thing, you know, when he got beat, You know, he bitched him, but he wasn't happy about it because you know, especially the Kennedy. Mm-hmm. He never got over the Kennedy one because he knew in his mind's eyes, it was stolen from him. And, you know,
I agree.
Here we are 50 years later, and what did Joe say? He stole it from me. Come on, man.
I forget. There's a Mark Twain quote that I could pull up, but I can't remember it off the top of my head. In regards to there's lies, damned lies, elections.
And statistics.
I'm gonna modernize it a little bit because it all goes in the same vein in the sense of, you know, some people, you know, don't take losing very, very well.
True.
And see, the thing that folks have to understand also with that, and you know, it's ironic. I don't want to go too long here, but I don't know if you guys have been checking out the Showtime thing on the First Lady.
Yeah, it's actually good.
Yeah. And they're at the point. Matter of fact, the last episode is the night that Trump wins, and
sure.
the thing we all have to remember here is, you know, it's hard to say whether Trump stole the damn thing, but it's also hard to say not to say that, you know, Miss Entitled ran poor campaign. And again, this is not to justify anything and everything that that Trump did in his time. But see, here's the thing. If I'm an interviewer with Hillary, I'm like, 63% of your own gender didn't want you.
Thank you.
Explain that.
There's a very strong anti-woman in this country. It serves me again.
I agree, but that's a, but you know, to me, That's a Kevin Costner ask the question thing, because the whole rush was of her being the first woman president, and even women weren't down.
I
know what you're saying, but see, as much as it pains me to say this, I can't blame white men on that one.
I'm with Tony on this one, Gary. No, seriously, Hillary Clinton ran a piss poor campaign. She really fucking did.
I understand, Mike. What I'm saying is this. You had a Negro in the White House 4 years, right?
No. Yeah. No, really? Really? So Chris Rock did win that election, for real. Okay.
I'm telling you, head of state. Yeah.
And these white guys say, hell no, as a black guy, what would do?
I agree. But it still doesn't deter the fact that 63% of her own gender told her to kiss the fattest part of their ass.
That's right. No, that's why I'd buy that for $1. No, truthfully.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton.
No, I'm not the most political person in the world, but, you know, when you can't even, I mean, if you can't even bring home, and see, what made it even worse was that she blamed, you know, she did the old, you know, after she got beat, she did the old trick, you know, 1-800 blame black folks.
Oh, fuck
yeah.
Yeah.
And see, put it this way. There were still people that wasn't cool about voting for her after all the things she said about Obama during the campaign. And then when she basically blamed black folks. I mean, you know, no disrespect, madam, whatever you are. You couldn't even bring home your own, you couldn't even carry your own strong suit.
She was too busy trying to carry hot sauce on her purse. I mean, please. You get a white bread guy like Tim Kaine and stick him in there instead of going hardcore, taking Bernie Sanders and what crest he was riding and say, you know what, Bernie, we can solve this shit afterwards. Meantime, let's win this motherfucker. And we'll be able to do
exactly.
4 years. And she chose not to do that.
Even your boy, even her boy, JFK, was like,
yeah,
I got it. I mean, he went against family, too, because remember, family didn't want, you know, Bobby Kennedy's been dead for years, and he still hates LBJ. And I ain't talking about LeBron. He went against everything. But again, but even he realized, you know what? I might be the next big thing, but I can't be the next big thing by my own self. And see, to me, that's what wound up happening. See, the reason why I call her Miss Entitled, because this way, I think I said this to you several times, Mike. Hillary Clinton is basically a female version of Richard Nixon. Mean, spiteful, and all that. She probably remembers somebody taking her Barbie doll when she was 7 and had that person killed.
Listen, she was raised in the old ways. She realized, well, you're a woman, and you're in a white man's world. So she made her bones by making this pact with Bill Clinton that she was going to ride his coattails to get in the White House.
She gave her kid, but the quote Eddie Griffin,
I don't think Hillary likes dick. I don't think she does either. You know, the whole point is she gave him a daughter. You know, and here they were Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. So during all that time when Perez was getting his dick sucked, you know, she was catching flack because she didn't respond to it like the angry, hurt woman, the Jennifer Flowers and all the other shit came out. Yeah, she knew what Bill was when he rolled up. And she decided to deal with him for better for worse. That I cannot fault. However, Tim Kaine, I can fault. You chose Tim Kaine over Bernie Sanders when you knew Tim Kaine was a piece of white bread in search of mayonnaise. He's a no way.
Mike. Tim Kaine is basically Mike Pence after using hair dye.
For real. That's right. And Gary, to go back to what you said, the axis for democracy in this country was turned on it by the fact that Hillary didn't do what the fuck she was supposed to. And that gave us Donald Trump. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, she brought all this on the American people. And as Tony said, if over 60% of them
vote.
That's a 2-hour conversation in of itself. They're in aptitude.
Yeah, exactly. Debbie
but
Washington is short for the shit.
I've used it there with a strong president and not use it. I don't understand that at all.
Well, then remember, you know why, Gare? It goes back to what you were saying before, because, see, they never wanted him. Look, that was, you know, Hillary basically had two coronations, and she fucked up both of them.
That's right.
She was supposed to be the bell ringer when Obama first ran, and then afterwards she was supposed to, you know, take out Trump. I mean,
that's right.
you only get so many opportunities to do the thing, you know.
Yeah, two bites of apple and you missed on both of them. Shit, you didn't even make applesauce.
That was more like pea than apple cider.
You're really not turning me off for applesauce, but yes, in all seriousness, Professor, good evening. You know, we know Hillary fucked up this election, and the fact that they're going through all this bullshit right now with the Lions Club and Congress and everything like that, it points back to that. She fucked up. She ran a piss-poor campaign, and the media never savaged her for it like they should. And good evening.
Oh, so I got to put on my conservative hat now and talk about
I don't think you ever took it off.
Actually, no, but, you know, it's just a matter of speaking. But I don't know what y'all are talking about, but when it comes to Hillary Clinton, Hillary, let's put it like this. Bill was able to get away with a weak campaign. But then, it was so obvious that all she did was repeat the mistake he made and got away with, and that is take the Negroes for granted. They had to be forced into buying media, black media. They were forced to, they were spending more on Asian Americans and Hispanics and all kinds of stuff, because that was one of my last major campaign efforts. And, in the black community, and this is one of the things I've always tried to get across to folks. Okay, why we need people on both sides. Okay, you go to these meetings and you say, well, Hillary's doing this and Hillary's doing that. Okay, Hillary's standing up there twiddling her thumbs while the opposition is doing whatever needs to be done. They're spending the money where it needs to be spent. They're buying, you know, they're making appearances where they need to make appearances, all those kinds of things. Right now in North Carolina, we have a race going on that's going to, I mean, I would love to see this young lady who used to live here, was a judge here before going to the state Supreme Court. But I would love to see her go to the Senate. If for no other reason than to keep these buttholes out who want to get in. But at the same time, look at the race that's being run. Listen, I came home from working the polls. I got home about 9:30. There was low turnout, weak turnout on both sides. But I get home like 9:30. When the news came on at 10 o'clock, guess what the first commercial was?
What?
Her opposition, and there's at least two these mega PACs that was spending money, running blatant lies against her. This is within what, 2.5 hours of the polls closing, because the polls close here at 7:30.
Okay.
We would wrap up mode at 6:15. So that when 7:30 rolls around and you close the doors and pull the signs and that kind of stuff in, we're tallying up and sending stuff off to the Board of Elections. And
okay.
So 2.5 hours later, her opposition is already running ads against her. That's how tight
the
opposition
time.
Is. Well, and this has been the MO of the Democrats. You heard Reggie talk about how they blew this and they blew that. And I remember when Hillary ran, I was at the polls all day. So so we can't listen to the news. We're literally, other than people going in and out the door, we're basically sequestered until we finish. And
right.
I got a call. I think I called Reggie and said, I look. And the first thing he said, it don't look good.
Reggie,
here's what needs to happen. Because this is why we white folks are on both sides, whether they agree or disagree. What's the line I always use? Hillary and her husband, Mr. Bill, got keys to the country club already.
That's
all
right.
All they got to do is show up and be rich and white.
Yep.
Bill can do what he wants to do. I told one group one time, I said, I'm not sure if Obama even screwed his Michelle, because they were on him in anything and everything that he did, including some things they made up. They were putting on Front Street. So he couldn't have done nothing wrong.
But
Hillary can do what she wants to do. Bill, even Biden, come on.
No, I think that's pretty much everything intact and in fact. And Tony, the quote, to paraphrase Mark Twain, you got assholes, assholelessness, and assholery. And I think Hillary definitely suffered from an extreme case of assholery by thinking and having the hubris to believe that she could get coronated into the presidency when we have all this white supremacy, white presidential nonsense backing up everybody.
By the way, your schoolhouse rock education is showing. But go ahead.
That's true.
It could be a noun, it could be a pronoun. It damn sure could be a verb. There's no doubt about that.
I gotta do a little Bernie Mac piece on that shit. I think you're right. But
in all honesty,
the mission of the Liars Club is to pretend that they're actually doing something. They made a point of saying that 20 million people saw this. Big fucking deal. I don't give a fuck. I don't care how many people saw it. It means nothing if somebody doesn't say Donald J. Trump's wannabe filthy Reich ass belongs in the Who Scout. He should be doing time for the shit he did.
He should be doing
I'm not
black
talking
and white. He should be doing black and white time.
That's right. That's right. That motherfucker belongs behind bars for real. And we're going to hear some more bullshit about how one representative, oh, I was just taking my family out for a little whatever, and some people were looking at the White House, and they were taking pictures. No, those motherfuckers are going recon. They know it was recon. Everybody knows it was recon.
Open the back door for these moves.
Thank you. You open the back door and say, you know, all your guys can come in through here. You know, you don't have to be a proud boy or whatever fucking sect to go in there and try to raid the place to know that they were casing the joint. You don't have to live in the neighborhood to know that these motherfuckers was casing the place. This was literally a political version of a home invasion. You know, they came in and they tried to rouse the place. And then on top of it, they had the homeowner saying, yeah, don't forget the silver over on the other side of the room. You know, he told them exactly what the fuck to do. And an area that was less than 5 miles wide, it took 3.5 hours for somebody to get there and do something. You know, as for the fact that Capitol Police died and all that, Trump should be put up on murder charges because he is indirectly responsible for the deaths of at least 5 people. You know, but let's not get in the way of those facts. Let's just run down the obvious shit. The obvious shit was, you lost, bitch. You know, take your ass and go home. You've got people now in different states saying, I believe in the big lie, and I'm going to get elected because of the big lie. All this bullshit is real. That's the only real thing about it. They took a lie and they ran with it. And the lie has taken on a life of its own. Hitler would be proud. You know, but as far as a dictator is concerned, he's not Hitler. He's more like Mussolini. He gesticulates and postures and, you know, shake his head, and whatever white hair he's got on his head will move about, but it will mean nothing because he fucked up. And Mike Pence, love him or hate him, stuck with the Constitution. Liz Cheney, love her or hate her, stuck with the Constitution and spoke up and said, that ain't right. And now you got these fools ready to sit here and put on this production and not getting results. Because the only results that make sense is putting these motherfuckers in jail or having them put before a firing squad and shot for sedition.
Amen.
Well, Michael, another thing to this too. I keep bringing it back up.
Yeah.
In Germany, you cannot buy this swastika. You can't do it. You're going to get you.
That's right.
We have three dates.
Yes,
tell them, Bron.
That's right.
Now, last time I checked, the Confederacy lost.
Yeah, they lost. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's another one. That's a meal. Don't spread them lies too loud, Jerry.
Yeah, that's right.
Most losers, either go to jail, get shot, or move somewhere else. Am I correct?
You can add pitch for the Yankees too, but that would just be mean.
Now, 80 years later, what do they do? They build statues of these dead generals.
And don't forget, Gary, they recreate their losses too with those Civil
right.
War.
And they do it on a yearly basis. You know, white supremacy has a habit of, you know, licking its wounds when it gets butthurt. The war between the states is the ultimate butthurt.
They don't like the fact that they came out.
Well, what do you expect from a pig but a grunt? If they have to reenact, what happened in the war between the states, that tells you that there's unfinished business. And any cracker who's worth his salt on the salt team will tell you that. Although, you know, we know, I say this to the professor affectionately, there are those who rationally sort this out. Fred, you know what the Republicans are doing. Now you know this. So why does this thing sit so sourly in the belly of a lot of folks?
Fred.
We lose Fred?
I don't know. Did we lose Fred? You back in the smokehouse?
Nope.
Well,
oh, there.
Why is this sitting in everybody's belly?
But, you know, one thing, among the things we keep overlooking with this whole scenario is what is true, what isn't true.
Who,
which way is up, which way is down, which way is left, which way is right. All these kinds of things come into play because, you know, You got people who are supposedly of sound mind and all that other kind of good stuff, right? But what do they do? It's not a cow. It's a four-legged animal. Which can be deceived. You know, they repute what the truth is because they want to change the wording. They want to change whole scenario. They just want to be our way or no way. And because of that, you keep coming back to square one. You get to square one, what you got? You have called into question because of one jerk. Because he decides he wants to float this false narrative. Do you know how many moving parts there are to this thing? You know, on the last major election, we had a judge of people working here.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these precincts have similar numbers of workers. A few have, right. You know, and let's go with an average of a dozen people that work there. Okay, and this is just the people. This is not the people out there handing out material. This is people who are legitimate, sworn poll workers.
Okay.
You're paid by the county.
Right.
Okay. Whatever 55 times 12 is, that's how many people you got. And we haven't got you the people back that are behind the scenes, the checks and all this kind of stuff, right? There's just too many moving parts to this scenario to say, okay, we going to cheat here. You know, as you progress through this scenario, the kind of stuff you keep coming up with, you can't keep a secret with a dozen people. And then, you have some of everybody on, you know, working at the poll. So what you end up with is a bunch of people that one or two people who ain't gonna lie, that one or two people who are going to go for broke when it comes to, doing what you're supposed to do.
Okay.
And you're not gonna go down, cause like I tell people, I am not gonna do 5 to 7 years in federal prison. I am nonsense. If that's what they're expecting you to do, and you're just not gonna do it. I mean, that's just plain and simple. You ain't gonna do it, and the reason you ain't gonna do it is if you get caught up in this thing. Yeah, if they had some valid information or kind of stuff, I could have seen boom with the line. But they ain't got none of that. There's too many moving parts to this animal. You know, you're talking about what, 500-600 people, 1,000 people.
Right.
And we're talking about one county. We have 100 counties in North Carolina.
Okay.
And see, when you end up taking, like, I think there's 3 oaths we end up taking. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking at it from that, from the 3 oaths we have. At some point in time, it will be too easy to backtrack, because some of the people who do this kind of work are very good at what they do. They're very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
They're very well-educated. But some of these people, I mean, I as a precinct judge, I've had people who couldn't read. You'd have to tell them everything. I mean, you'd have to remind them. I mean, sometimes you put them in a position where, okay, you just hand the people a piece of paper, okay?
Right. Yeah.
And see, with that kind of stuff in there, I personally could not coax myself to do wrong intentionally, because it just ain't worth it.
All right, but that said, before we swing into sports, that said, has Trump played his whole card by letting everybody know that he's going to approach this through the states and get people on boards of Secretary of State and work the polls so that he can influence that in the same aspect that he tried to set certain places up in the election when he tried to cheat by getting rid of the mailboxes? In other words, are we heading for a fall because he's already put this thing in motion?
It depends on what the voters. Also, it depends on the economy, the gas prices, the job market. See, now Biden had to prove that he can be president, and so far, he ain't doing too well.
Biden's a bitch. Biden should have arrested everybody who got busted in those fake elector scams in the various states. They should have immediately been put behind bars. You know, you shouldn't have to have some journalists find out that there were fake electors trying to count votes. That's fraud. That's fraud. That's the kind of shit your ass goes to jail for. I got Radio Reggie, maybe to answer the question. Reggie, can you hear us?
Yes, sir. Keep it rolling. I'm right here. Keep it rolling.
Well, we just made it clear. Trump is trying to seed the country with people who will be in positions that when elections come about, they'll have major influence in counting the votes and doing what they want in return. What say you on that?
I mean, why is everybody surprised? I mean, you got Democrats that are behind the scenes going after the squad. Nancy Pelosi won, and you got a group of Democrats that want to keep moderate Democrats in office and keep the progressives out. So both parties behind the scenes really are working with each other. I mean, people need to start, you know, understand how government really works. They ain't trying to love black folks. I mean, y'all got to keep it 100, man. Both sides are shook. Mm-hmm. They're working together. I mean, you got a person that did everything he could to overthrow the government, and his ass is still walking free. But yet you got four or five brothers in Atlanta who are on a RICO charge when the lyrics and their words supposedly had them arrested for a crime supposed they committed. Come on now.
Mm-hmm.
You see what time it is.
I agree. To quote Don Cheadle and Bulwer, ain't no democracy up in this going on in this motherfucker. That is fact. But I want to give this a wrap and get to sports because we have the Tampa Bay Lightning looking to do something that we've to be a fucking dynasty. Yes. Now, Tony, we were kicking this last night, and if Tampa does this, it's done two things. It's pretty much invalidated the movie Slapshot because the team went down to Florida and became a champion. The second thing is that they have a hell of a team. And there's a brother, Pierre Edward Belmar, who will get his name on Stanley Cup and be a true gold brother. And they won three in a row. Three in a row is three in a row. We can't argue with that. What say you, team?
Oh, you know, it's shooting. They're definitely trying to put the D in dynasty right now. Matter of fact, they're actually sort of showing you how they are. They were down 3-1, and now it's 3-3 late in the second period. So they ain't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is a great matchup for the NHL because you basically get the team that's trying to three-peat and the next one in a lot of people's eyes with Colorado. So, and look, mainstream is probably not going to jump all on this because there's not an L.A. or a New York or a Boston on there. But, you know, hey, shame on them. But it was interesting. I guess your favorite commissioner today basically said the NHL revenues are up, you know, the ratings were up in the postseason, and you know, this was the first full season in 2 years, and it showed because and they reaped the benefits of it because, you know, the popularity is higher and is as high as it's been in quite a while. And he was also adding that, you know, they're already working on next year's schedule and trying to improve even on the visibility scale. So, you know, the sport has thrived in spite of Mr. Bettman as opposed to because of Mr. Bettman. So also helps to have arguably the best two teams in the league playing. And look, good, bad, or indifferent, percentage-wise, there are more brothers playing hockey than there are in the NBA, in Major League Baseball.
That's got to stand
for something. You know, good, again,
that
good, bad,
stand
or indifferent.
For a lot, actually. And having said that, you know, it's going on south of the border, north of the border. The sport is very healthy in Canada. You know, it's part of their culture. But the Canadian markets may be experiencing something that all sports deal with. Smaller markets that have to either draft well or have their front office work very effectively in order to maintain. I was in Canada, and I saw the Battle of Calgary between the Flames and the Oilers. They have two great, exciting players in Calgary. It's Johnny Gaudreau, who might be a free agent, and Connor McDavid, who could be the next one. He's shown flashes of true greatness, but can Edmonton afford him? Edmonton lost because they really need a goaltender. Mike Smith is good, but he needs to be great, and he just can't handle that.
Mike Smith can't move aside as his problem.
Well, he's been around a long time. He played as well as he could play.
Man, I've been goalie for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that you cannot give a sniper is a routine that you do.
I agree.
Mike Smith, if you go above the glove, if you go glove side high,
it's going in. I agree. He's got a weak spot, just like most goaltenders do. But there are times where you have to rise above that. He did in the playoffs against Calgary. He did in the playoffs otherwise, but there was just too much pressure. And on top of that, you got a marquee star that will not only pack him in at home, but pack him in on the road. McDavid is a true star. Colorado has a true star, Nathan MacKinnon. As you'll probably see if you really get a chance, if you like hockey, you'll see how good this guy is. But having said all of that, you got to have the checks to match up. They don't have the checks to match up. And this is a football issue that we'll discuss later. But, Tony, when it comes to paying that payroll that you talk about, you got to have the checks to write. Edmonton, I think because they're a small market, they don't have the checks to write. And I think Calgary's in the same boat.
Yeah, in many ways, Calgary is probably worse off because they're probably the farthest Western team next to Calgary. But
yes,
the other thing as well is that you have to, you know, you literally and figuratively have to pick and choose your battles in the sense of, okay, now, you know, McDavid, I believe, re-upped big time a few years back. So he's not doing any, you know, buying something ridiculous. Now, Mr. Drysdale, the Robin to his Batman.
Yep.
You know, he's looking to get his pay. Meanwhile, Captain Marvel, otherwise known as Evander Kane, is sitting there basically saying, you know,
where's mine?
I just put on a little highlight reel to remind y'all that I'm still who I am. Now,
that's right.
There's still some pending stuff with the league and all this other stuff, but it was very interesting. I guess the day after the Oilers were eliminated, Kane basically put like this full page ad, which sort of read as sort of like a thank y'all, I'm out. I don't think it was him being malicious. I think it was just him basically knowing what the deal is. You know.
Yeah, that's right.
Edmonton is probably going to pay Dreisaitl and they also know that in their mind's eyes, depending on how you look at it, they're a goalie away from getting back to a final.
Exactly.
And
do they,
so now if they were New York or Detroit, Philly, you know, whatever, hell, even Montreal or Toronto, they could probably try to do all of them as opposed to saying we got to do one and suck wind on the other. Now, they're not going to let Dreisaitl go because if they do, McDavid will start beating their ass in public, and you don't want that. You don't want a Jack Eichel situation that Buffalo had, in a sense.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
And ironically, again, that was another somewhat small market who had to get rid of their guy as well.
True.
But it's a slippery slope because, you know, for selfish reasons amongst us here, we'd like to see him stay in Edmonton and thrive. But
true,
if he were to go somewhere and, you know, do what he has done most of his career, it would definitely be cool. I mean, I'm not going to say he's in a no-win. I'm not saying he's in a win-win situation, but there's something, you know, as great as Colorado looked, and we saw it, we definitely saw it in the Western Conference Finals when they basically dismissed them. There's definitely something brewing in Edmonton.
Yeah.
There's definitely something brewing in Edmonton, and literally for the first time since that skinny boy with the terrible haircut that used to play there. They've got an opportunity to, you know, put themselves back on the hockey map.
Where did they get that god awful uniform? The blue pajamas?
Unfortunately, that's becoming a trend in college and pro sports where basically teams want to just, you know, these third jerseys or have the look of Walmart shoppers on any given Sunday.
Yeah, they do. But, you know, let us remember that it was a black man who solidified the Edmonton dynasty. You know, just as Vasilevsky is playing well in Tampa Bay, Grant Fuhr played well in Edmonton, and he forced Bill Ranford to up his game so that Edmonton could continue their dynasty. You know, I don't know of any other goaltender that has ever, ever scored in double figures. Goaltenders don't do that. You might get an excuse me goal every now and then. You might get an assist on an outlet pass a la Wesley Unseld. But goaltenders don't do what Grant Fuhr did. Grant Fuhr scored 11 points in the year that Gretzky scored 202 points with the 90-something goals and all that bullshit. The point I'm making is that matchups are what make great sports and great teams. And this leads us to football and what goes on in the trenches. Fred, we talked about it all the time with your Steelers. We know that LC Greenwood belongs in the Hall of Fame. We also know that there are individual players. Reggie, I can remember a player that played for Washington named Ray Brown. He was a guard. And he used to kill the Dallas Cowboys. It was like he saw red, and he would just demolish Dallas every time he played against them. Guy, we already know about Marv Hubbard. When he was the Raiders, he was a psycho. He'd eat up the Kansas City Chiefs. And when he became a Chief, he'd eat up the Raiders. So that one-on-one matchup means everything. But what does it do for a player when they get to the pinnacle and reach the Hall of Fame? I am upset at the fact that these so-called writers who grade the talent don't seem to know shit from Shinola when it comes to greatness. I will start off with Eric Williams because he is the most obvious one in my mind. And Patrick Farrar and I were kicking this earlier. I think when Patrick comes on, he can illuminate on this a little bit further. But everybody here, I believe, can agree that Reggie White was a great player. I think everybody can agree that Reggie White was a Hall of Famer. I don't know if everybody saw what I saw because I covered the Eagles. I saw Eric Williams manhandle, and I say it like it's manhandle, Reggie White on occasion. Those two went at it, and it was as fantastic one-on-one play as I've ever seen. He belongs in the Hall of Fame, but all you can remember from Eric Williams is that they tried to set him up, the Dallas police did, in a scam with Michael Irvin because they were after Irvin, and Williams suffered. Now, he was acquitted because the lady lied, and she got busted lying, and her name was Nina Sharavan, so that nobody can say we didn't say it. But it killed any chance he had for the Hall of Fame. And, yes, I believe he's played long enough to get in the Hall of Fame. Does anybody here agree with me?
Well, Mike, if you know anything about football, both technically as well as playing the game, we're going to have two guys around over history that can compete with the likes of Mr. Williams, okay? I mean, as some guys would say, he was a hoss. I mean, among his qualities was he could run.
Mm-hmm.
Which a lot of guards and tackles can't do more than, realistically, most guards and tackles are good for, what, 5 steps?
That's good. That's
he
right.
He was one of the characters who could be, you go away from him and then cut back. Guess what you do?
That's right.
You run to the block and he set for you. And see, all too often that's overlooked in some people's cases, which tells me that you're not a good judge of football because when you take the time to study the game, the way the game really gets played out. Because, I mean, I don't care. You need a running back and a quarterback, all them guys who get the glory.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and take away quality life from them. What do you have? You have a beat up, broke up, black guy or white guy, depending on what position you play still. And you cannot win without quality life.
That's right.
And you see the way they do now, you see the various ones out there.
I
watch some games over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And what they will do is they'll bring a guy in based on the quality of his play at left tackle.
Right.
And they'll know what that position means. Well, suppose your left tackle goes down. Okay, you bring in the next best guy, you ship the next best guy over to play left tackle, then you move in the spot where you move. In the spot where you move him from, what do you do? The next best blocking guy. Because
exactly.
You're always going to put her, well, in some terminology, you just use your 6 o'clock. But you always going to cover that spot where you put the last spot for your quarterback. So you always want to have his left side protected. That's usually not where he's going to be
throw it to is going to be
home. Right.
You see what's coming up behind you.
Mm-hmm. I'm amazed that people don't take into consideration the question, or what should be the question, how did he play against your peers? If you would ask, how good was this guy? Because their opinions, I would think, would matter more than somebody watching the game. You got to know who's in that trench with you. You know, when Dan Marino came into the league, everybody agreed this guy was going to be great. Miami Dolphins went batshit and said, we got to protect this guy. He's our star. So every year Marino played, they always made sure that they had a tight line that could pass block to protect. But they made one major mistake, in my opinion. Excuse me. Richmond Webb, their tackle, probably had a Hall of Fame career taken from him because he never got the opportunity to drive block. All he had to do was pass block and protect Marino. But you guys know that Miami, other than one year Delvin Williams ran for 1,000, did not have a 1,000-yard rusher after that. They always wanted to protect Marino, and Marino always had to throw 40 or 50 times a game for Miami to be in it. Now, because of that, you don't get to fairly assess whether Richmond Webb can drive block. So I asked the panel, is Richmond Webb a Hall of Famer?
I believe so. I believe he's definitely a Hall of Famer. I think, you know, in the scheme of the way the game is played, because you know, fortunately or unfortunately, there's more. It's a passing league now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good, bad, or indifferent. But no, I think he belongs in the same breath as some of these other great offensive linemen as well, because think of how the position has evolved over the years. You know, take somebody like Jim Parker, you know, longtime mainstay for the Colts. Now, he would basically be considered a runt today. But
that's true.
His technique is probably better than half the guys in the league most of the time, and that's what set him apart. Now, you know, again, he was again blocking for arguably the greatest quarterback of all time with Unitas as well, and. They won in different. They could beat you in different ways. They had Lenny Moore, they had Raymond Berry, they had the strong defense. He gets in strictly because of his association with the Colts, and rightfully so. And to me, you can't punish Webb just because Marino didn't get to another Super Bowl. You shouldn't punish Webb, because of that. And when you look at, historically the great linemen who have worn those Dolphin jerseys, you know, Larry Little, Kuchenberg, Jim Langer, Dwight Stevenson. Yep. I mean, to me, he is part of that tradition, and so yeah, I there's no doubt in my mind. I think, and clearly, was he the best in his position, basically for like a five to seven year stretch? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, you're gonna get these voters who are basically part of the distinguished group of former ex girlfriends that just feel the need to just tell you what he didn't do as opposed to what he did do, and that's going to whatever. And see, what's also bothersome is a lot of the guys that we mentioned over the years, what have you, that, well, if you let everybody in, you can get me on. But see, that's bullshit. Because if the guy's worthy. You know, you don't ask how big or how small. If he's worthy, he's worthy. Who cares? And for the most part, football usually gets it right because they do, you know, a small class for them is usually five folks. We've had years where baseball didn't put in anybody.
True. See, that is absolutely wrong. When you go back to, okay, I heard this for 3 years with football and basketball. Three guys, four guys. And guys who, quote unquote, don't quite make it. How can you not quite make it?
Thank you. The reason
you don't quite make it is because you got jackasses up there who are voting who don't know what the hell they're talking about or what they're doing.
That's what I'm talking about, Fred. They play in the hall of very good. What the fuck do you know if you've never strapped on? I can't stand that shit. I also hate the bias that was put upon the AFL. Gary, you sat there for years and you saw your Raiders play well. You know that the Raiders were the bad boys in the NFL. You know about the shit between Rozelle and Davis, chairman out. But you also know that Dow LaMonica was the mad bomber. And he won more games percentage-wise than any quarterback in AFL history. In my mind, regardless of whether he won a Super Bowl or not, Dow LaMonica is a Hall of Famer. Do you agree?
I agree. Also, you forgot Warren Wells.
I didn't forget him. I just ain't got to him yet. But yes, go ahead.
Warren Wells deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because he was the best wide receiver in those 5 years than anybody else on the planet.
Warren Wells put up some frightening statistics. There was one season in which he had 14 touchdown catches and averaged over 26 yards catch. In the fantasy football world, the National Football League now, Warren Wells would be a god. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
However,
to paraphrase Denzel Washington, Cooper Kupp ain't got shit. On
Warren Wells. That's right. Cup of soup, whatever the fuck his name is, he doesn't have anything on Warren Wells. But the AFL players were deliberately biased, I guess, because when the merger was made real, after Kansas City whooped that ass, they definitely put the draws on guys who should be in. We wrote a book about this. We've made arguments about this. And there are goo gobs. I would say more goo than gob, but what do I know? Goo gobs are players who belong in the Hall of Fame, and many of them came from the HBCUs. You know, long before we had Terrell Owens or Chris Carter, the big receivers were represented by Otis Taylor. Otis Taylor belongs in the Hall of Fame. He's not in there. The Chiefs have put Len Dawson, Buck Buchanan, who else?
Willie Lanier.
Willie Lanier.
Thank you. Willie Lanier.
There
should have been at least one. Oh, Johnny Robinson.
Jim Marsalis probably should be
Marsalis
in. And we all know. I know, and we all know that Otis Taylor should have been a long time ago.
Yes, and Johnny Robinson. So you got basically four teams, when you can say it should be six and seven of them.
Mike, something that keeps coming up. You know,
okay.
you always don't have the bus and the well, you don't have all of those. But too many people who are judging these guys.
Yeah.
Don't know what they're looking at. And,
thank you.
You know, there's more than I think there's something like a dozen of the 70s era Steelers in the Hall of Fame. Now, please explain to me, what was it about
Chelsea Greenwood?
South Carolina State comes to mind.
Yes.
What did he do that made him be better after 20 years than he was 5 years after he retired? And
come on.
In those years after he retired,
yep.
There were times when they only put in four or five people, or three or four people.
That's right. Yep.
And so, you know, this whole thing about who, you know, who shouldn't go in and why, that's a bunch of malarkey. Because you're punishing guys for something that they cannot control. And in the process, you're also punishing guys, well, there's some, you know, I mean, if you've ever seen an interview with Nate Joe Green, what does he always tell you? If I didn't have LC Greenwood covering my
thank
left flank,
uh-huh.
I couldn't have done what I did because, remember, okay, go back to the Super Bowls. There was two of those Super Bowls that Green played in that he could barely walk.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And Greenwood covered his behind. Banaszak
yep.
covered his behind.
That's
but,
right.
But they needed the symbol of him being out there playing, and he covered
yep.
as best he could. So for once,
that's
he got
right.
things under control.
Mm-hmm.
Donnie, you know, people like Donnie Shell was covering them deep.
That's right.
Just like Shell hasn't got any better since the day he got inducted, he was no better 10 years from the day he retired to the
exactly.
he got inducted. So this whole scenario of who goes into the Hall of Fame and why they go in or why they don't go in, that's just so much bunk because
yeah. –
You got people out there. You got people out there who don't know what they're looking at. And they get their own little prejudices in it. But he went to a small school. Okay, let's backtrack. How many times do you take time to watch the introduction to some of these games? Okay, you had. Linebackers from such and such school, you know, and I know there's someone who will tell you, well, you know, the best linebacker from Ohio State, Penn State,
yep.
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, Robert Bazile is what? Ground me? Like, you know, why it take 40 years for him to go in?
That's right.
Why don't we watch him the games? What do they say? He's the best linebacker. You know, he's like one guy. He's the best linebacker I've seen the whole year. And
takes
we're talking
line.
About the game 11-12. He didn't have that nickname because he was, you know, kinder, gentler.
Mm-hmm.
One, he could cover anybody. Two,
yep.
he could stop anybody. And I only give you this as a duty for Johnny Shell.
Yeah.
If he were not already in. Go back to, I want to say, like 70, I think it was
Earl Campbell for like second year.
Yeah.
But then Johnny Shelton stuck him as he broke, as he broke out of the, broke through the hole, Johnny Shelton stuck him. He played three, even in three plays, and two of them were passes, was pass blocking. He nailed him. And he did that consistently across the board throughout the year.
That's right.
So, you go back up there. I mean, you know, okay, let's go back to talking about he went to a small college. You know, Ben went to where? Miami of Ohio.
I'm not trying to rehash this for the sake of, you know, remembering anything. I'm trying to right wrongs here. If you got eyes and you've played the game and you've seen the game played and you can properly assess the game's play, you know tape don't lie. We see tape, or we've seen tape all the time. We can tell who's playing and who's not. And we can do it. Why aren't they doing it? That's my main beef. And having said that, that leads me to another aspect of this. The price of mediocrity. You know, we now have extensions on this because we have one white boy, Carson Wentz.
Oh, boy.
The Eagles went out of their way to spend money to move up in the draft to get it. They went from 13th to 2nd. Now, they may have been able to get him at 13, but that's not even here nor there. The fact was they had a hard-on for this kid. Okay, so comes the draft. It's either him or Goff. L.A. chooses Goff, the dumb fucks. And Eagles choose Wentz, the dumb fucks. Anyway, Wentz plays okay his first year. And I say okay. But, there's always a but, he does not show up when it's money time. He got hurt. You can't fault him for getting hurt. It happens. But then comes Big Dick Nick. Big Dick Nick wins the Super Bowl for the Eagles. And this wasn't a flash in the pan because Big Dick Nick, when he was drafted a couple years prior, had a season when he only threw two picks and threw 27 touchdowns. Now, having said that, Eagles have invested all this money in Wentz. And they decide, all right, we got to make a choice here. We can't just keep doing this. In spite of the fact that Big Dick Nick has been successful for them and that he's really embraced their offense and how they play. So they make the move to keep Wentz. They fuck up. Wentz, slow with his footwork. He times his passes in such a manner that defenses can read his ass like the Philadelphia Inquirer. In short, the boy ain't shit. And having said that, the Eagles are put between a rock
son,
and a hard place.
Son, it rolled off
before.
Your tongue with grace, son. I like the way it rolled off your tongue, son.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. So now they decide that maybe we fucked up and this guy ain't all that. All right. So they want to get rid of him. And they have a buying partner. And they say, okay, but. And again, there's always that but.
There's some sisters again.
You got to suck up some cap space. The Eagles suck up $35 million of cap space so that Wentz can get the fuck out. All right. So he goes to another franchise. The Indianapolis Colts at the time have arguably one of the best backs in the league this side of Badass Henry. They have but one game to win to make it to the postseason.
Uh-oh.
Wentz is quarterbacking. You know what happens.
Oh.
More proof.
Mm-hmm.
The boy ain't shit. And, of course, they miss out. So now the Washington Commanders, whatever the fuck they're going to call themselves, have picked him up, and he's going to be their starting quarterback. It
Maybe.
Is fair to say that somewhere close to $70 million has changed hands from the time they picked him to the time they found out he wasn't shit until the time that he went to Indianapolis to Washington. $70 million. And yet they're going to bitch about the fact that Watson got his big money. Watson, frankly, earned his big money. He got what the market allowed. If somebody wanted to pay him $225 million, that ain't my business. But he may not get to play at all because of other off-the-field action. But having said that, that you would pay this much money to somebody who's not even good, and I say not even good because he hasn't proven it, is proof that white supremacy never lets up, even in the games that people play. No matter what, Carson Wentz is doomed to the reality that the boy ain't shit. And even though he's not on my team anymore, thank God, the league is allowing him to stay in it. Now, that would not happen with a Watson, with a Russell Wilson, with a Dak Prescott. You'll see where I'm going with this. What say y'all on this?
Well, just to play into the Washington thing, this is looking eerily similar to something that happened a few eons ago when when the Washington team spent a first round pick on some politician named Heath Shuler. Heath Shuler was going to, you know, make them forget, you know, Sammy Baugh and Billy Kilmer and Doug Williams all rolled into one. All he did was basically remind them of Jim Delgazzo, but that's another story in and of itself.
No shit.
But on a lower level, they wound up picking a guy by the name of Gus Frat. You know, basically, if you look under the dictionary, NFL journeyman, it's a nice big 8x10 picture of Gus Frat. Good player, you know, not great player, but, you know, journeyman, what have you. And what's interesting is that, you know, now think about it now. Indy, as desperate as Indy has been for quarterbacking over the years since Jughead, Peyton Manning, left town, they gave him a year. How dare you? I know. Can you just see him with that stupid hat and the hamburger and envision Jughead?
He got written all over him.
I'm telling you. But think about it. Even Indianapolis gave up on him and after a year and took the consolation prize of Vanilla Ice, otherwise known as Matty Ice or whatever ice, you know, I can't even call him Italian ice at this point. But let's put it this way. I'm going to say it. I think there's a better chance of Heineke keeping his job as opposed to Carson Wentz being handed the keys because they spent, you know, a gazillion bucks on him or what have you. That's going to be an interesting thing to see because I don't think it's going to be written in stone where Mr. Wentz is just going to be and Lord, if he gets hurt, you know, then it's a wrap.
Well,
it's a wrap.
That's the other aspect of this. Well, Donovan McNabb said he was injury prone. And he was. And they got mad at him because he was. They're like, oh, it sounds great because you played here. No, Donovan said, the boy ain't shit. He's fragile. And he gets hurt.
Son, I tell you, son, you're going through the motions fine, son. I like the way you follow through with it. Great job,
son. That's what
son.
I'm talking about. That's right. I got Patrick Farrar with me, and we were talking about this. Patrick, can you hear?
Live and love and color, fellas. What it ain't.
What's up, Baker? We're going to get rid of Baker Mayfield, man. Get him out of town. He got to go. He got to stay. He got to get the hell up out of there.
That's two wins for the Steelers this year. Let him stay right where he is. Matter of fact, let him play for both of the Ohio teams. You know, if he can't play for Ohio State, but he can play for Brown.
He might be in Pittsburgh.
Look, y'all gonna make Patrick lose the seven hairs that he still has now. There's no need for all of that now. That's what I'm saying, man. That's what I'm saying. I'm thinking about Patrick's health and well-being here. There's no need for all of that.
We must take care of our own. Patrick, we were talking about before we left for me to go on the show. You were making a nice insight about Tony Boselli. Could you please elucidate?
Well, I'm trying to repeat much of the story. For the years I covered the Giants. If you went to the Giants Stadium, they have the visitors tunnel was also was a theater. In a sense of Giant fans who booed everybody and their mama. And there was about 30, 40 guys up there. They were up there every game. They got to know me because I had my Ohio State hat all the time. And they always say, here's Ohio State University. And I used to salute them and go about my business. But they booed everybody. But one day, they walked out of the tunnel. And I could see the guy. I told him I could see the guy with the giant hard hat on, blue with the giant signal and the red strap in the middle. He talked about anybody. A big lineman would come back. He says, "Why don't you try out salad rather than blocking?" I'm going, "That's cold," you know. So all of a sudden this guy comes out, right? And they booed everybody and their mama. But this one day, this guy walks out about 6'7", had to be 200 pounds, and he walked out in the tunnel and looked back at them, and nobody said nothing. It was quiet as a church mouse. And that person was Tony Boselli. And I can see like I'm seeing that my light in this room here. Tony Boselli was an outstanding player. There's no doubt about it. But make a long story short, Tony Boselli is about to go into the Hall of Fame. But there is a question about the legitimacy of his position and stature in the Hall of Fame, led by a guy named Bruce Smith. Bruce Smith said, and with information that can back up what he's saying, Bruce Smith has a problem with Tony Boselli becoming in the Hall of Fame because Bruce Smith is the other end of the situation where Tony Boselli had a great game against Bruce Smith, and based upon that, people and the individuals and sponsors who like Tony Boselli led that as the key, as the benchmark of him being in the Hall of Fame. Bruce Smith has jumped back and said, wait a minute. The guy was good, but he had one good game against me, and this is what you're going to need as a Hall of Fame? Well, obviously, Boselli has gotten past that. But what the problem is, Tony Boselli blocked for a guy named Brunell, who was a left-handed quarterback, right? But, as we know, most quarterbacks on the right are right-handed and the stronger, and the, and his backside got to be, you know, covered.
Come on.
Lee Marcello didn't have to do that. All right. So, as Mike said, guys like Richmond Webb and Will Fulford, who were just as good, ain't even considered the Pro Hall of Fame. So it has caused a little bit of it's caused an intense conversation, really an intense conversation, and the folks in Jacksonville ain't happy. They call Bruce Smith everybody but his mama about it. But the fact is, there's some validity to what they're saying.
There you go. There's definitely
some
advantage, because if you're weighing in on greatness, you definitely got the axe. And I say axe, not average. Some of your peers did this cat play at the highest level. Did he dominate in that? I mean, I would love to ask Lynn Swan what he thought about Harold Jackson, because I think Luke Williams makes this point in a most excellent manner. Harold Jackson has twice as many yards receiving as Lynn Swan does. Now, Lynn may have the chips, but if we looked at the tapes, and back in the day, you used to be able to go to NFL Films and look at the tapes, you could see Harold Jackson definitely belongs in the National Football League Hall of Fame. But where's the backup? Where are the beat writers to say, this guy belongs here? They're not doing their job. And nothing can be more horrible than the beat writers in Cincinnati who can't know what fucking time it is when they see somebody like Snake, first of all, play out of his position because he was not a quarterback, then come up with 60-odd interceptions over his career and not be pushed into the Hall of Fame.
The Hall of Fame. That's true.
How the hell? How the ham damage do you allow something like that to happen? As Reggie was saying, how fucking dare you not give Snake Rowdy his due?
You know, and see, what's also the other factor also is, Mike, is the guy, you know, the guys who see him, who have seen him play, other than us, are no longer, you know, they're no longer a part of that. That hype machine, so to speak, when they in the quote unquote closed door meetings, and allow me to have the old man of the mountains moment here, in the sense where these youngins don't know anything past 1979, and see what's worse, and see. To me, I know why you're harder on the youngins, because see, if these are the same ones that can go to that can go to Pro Football Reference or Pro Basketball Reference or Baseball Reference, they can also go to YouTube and actually physically watch these guys. Because again,
Like doing the right thing.
Well, it's called doing your damn job. You know?
Thank you.
T-Mac, look at it this way. In the last week or couple weeks, I've watched several things they put up on Earl Monroe. And several of the guys make comments like, you know, he's the best one-on-one player I've ever seen because he was unstoppable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, now, first of all, for those who know me, all that greatest of all time stuff, to me, is a bunch of bullcrap. Because take for instance, these guys now, and I think Walt Frazier was one that brought this out. He said, you got a guy standing wide open on the perimeter, and remember, for most of the time that Frazier and Earl played together, there was no such thing as a three-point line.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can't punish them for that. Okay.
Yep.
Monroe still holds a college, I think two or three college records. Although he was 42 points a year, 42 points a game as a senior, really hasn't been that big of a deal. And then his own teammate broke his scoring single game scoring record. So, you know, that's not a big deal. But he, and it's not to say that Pearl didn't deserve to go into the Hall of Fame, but some of these other guys that are out there, and now you see now they're taking up space for men that were reserved for men, for women, which they should do. But at the same time, though, don't punish a guy, and you know, because you know, like they say, well, I call it matador defense in the paint.
Well,
you know, can, you know, think about it. You see guys, you see a guy, because I remember talking to this old head. They said, well, you know, yeah, guys back in the day, you know, when Connie Hawkins used to take off at the free throw at the top of the key and slam and people. So, yeah, some people he did, but some people he didn't. Well, why not?
Yep.
Because he wanted to drive, he wanted to kick off from the top of the key again, and he wanted to be able to walk when he got to the top of, past the top of the key, because not everybody would let you do that. And see, you had guys like Willis Reed, you know. Reed totally altered his game because he was not a center in college more than 1 year,
right?
Because he had a teammate that was three or four inches shorter than him. That was, you know, because I was just telling somebody the other day. Do you realize that the team that Willis Reed was on that won the NAIA national championship had three other guys who were went on to be professionals, and he the only place they could put him on the court and use his talent as a freshman was at the power forward. So that's what he played. And so he got into the NBA. He could still shoot like a forward. He could still rebound like a forward. He had a floor game like a forward. And so those are things that made him so good. He made people like Russell and Chamberlain, you know, come on out and get some of this. And that's how he had to play me.
That's what he used to do. That's true.
With all the stuff they talk about, Michael this and Michael that. Well, Michael got so many points that he had a 3-point line. Really? Had no 3-point line, and then they open up the lane to prevent him from doing this thing.
Thank you very much.
He called it dunking free throws because his skill set was that good. And I say,
yeah,
you know,
it was.
I mean, I have watched games from back in the late 50s, early 60s with him playing. I won't say it was embarrassing, but it was embarrassing some of the guys he played against and what he did to them. And see,
he was ahead of his time.
You know, realistically, the same kind of go for Kareem and several other guys because Jim O'Fady, come on.
Yep.
Yes.
You know, excellent player. He could play.
Outstanding player.
You know,
yeah.
And the fact that he put in 40 years, 10 of which he died, to get him in the Hall of Fame, that makes no sense whatsoever.
I agree, but this is the problem of the press. You're not doing your damn job if you can't make observations like this. If you don't understand why player A is better than player B, and bring it within the confines of the sport. You have no business doing your job. I was a member
Absolutely.
Of the Pro Football Writers of America, but I wasn't there simply because I just applied. I knew what the fuck I was talking about, and we've been on the air 10 years with people who know what the fuck they're talking about, and we simply abhor folks who don't know what the fuck they're talking about, Chris Murray. And that's exactly why I have to pass set.
Thank you.
said, don't get me started. If it please the motherfucking court, I have to say that the talk needed is to improve the quality of those who have a vote in the halls of fame for every sport. And I would say, without a doubt, that most of the people that are in the so-called press corps for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, they ain't shit. And they all need to be fired. All of them should be indicted for first-degree assholery, scumbaggery, and dumb fuckery. And they should be all guilty, guilty, guilty. Let them fry hog fat.
I got to get that word into the spelling bee, because that's really. And Mike, I know who they're going to be replaced with or either be added to. It's very simple, and it sort of goes back in regards to Mr. Smith. For all the professional halls of fame, every living Hall of Famer has to have a vote.
Yes.
To me, that should be mandatory. That should be part of being a Hall of Famer. Well, yeah, possibly.
I agree with you, because who can tell you better? Who can tell you better? If the pros had a say, then I guarantee that Curly Colt would be a Hall of Famer, because they would tell you, Curly Coat would sop up that gap like gravy on a biscuit. So, yes, he belongs. Dave could say that Fat Holmes belongs in the Hall of Fame for the very same reason.
Mike, how long has it taken to get the Oakland wide receiver, number 21, Oakland Raiders?
Cliff Branch.
Who's always open.
And guess what? Fred Biletnikoff, who got in, basically said, well, he should be in because he made it possible for me to catch a daggone ball.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Hello. You know, they knew that. See, they supposedly know what the fuck they're talking about, but they ignore how the mindset of the Raiders was. The Raiders said, we're going to put up 11 guys. Our 11 guys can beat your 11 guys. And that's exactly what they were doing. Biletnikoff and Wells, later Ray Chester, later Mike Ciani, later Cliff Branch, Bill Miller. All those motherfuckers said, our job is to get open. I would have loved to have been able in my prime to catch an 8 or a 9 from Daryl LaMonica, because I know that ball would get downfield. And I had to haul my black ass down there to catch that ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It was a 20-yard line.
Yeah.
20-yard line. Mm-hmm. And he's got a bubble return, right?
Yep.
One play. 88 yards.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that.
My vertical game, man. The problem is, which is obvious, which is systemic to the people in this business, and particularly at the advent, at the explosion of talk radio, they had a tremendous amount of influence on the writers, because most of them were buddies with the writers, because they provided content with the show. The writers and their friends, they went to the same bars after the games. They went to the same golf courses after games, because when they set up for major events at the games, they would buddy up. And who are you going to call? I'm going to call this writer or that writer. What's going on? I mean, the primary source here in the tri-state area were two guys named Francesa and Russo. Now, if you listen to Russo on First Take with Stephen A., it's obvious that Russo is the prime example of the past, because he will also he will limit the amount of greatness on particular athletes, particularly black ones, and particular positions and game style to what they did. Case in point today, he said today that Dak Prescott is not a top 10 quarterback because he's not accurate. Well, damn. If he ain't top 10 quarterback, what did Tony Romo do all the years he was there? So my point is, that's the kind of mindset that puts in people's brains, and particularly the young guys who come in who want to be like Russo or be on the side of people like Russo to get exposure, that's what happens.
It's shit like that wakes my last nerve. You know, how are you going to go ahead and make an argument that so-and-so really can play when we see evidence to the otherwise? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that 20% he couldn't play, but Bruce Smith, you better pay attention to what he's saying. If he's saying Tony Basile ain't all that, he got me one time, and after that, I ate his lunch. You know, what writer is going to come up and step up and say, Bruce is right? You know,
And Tony
Baselli
was good.
That's just the thing. See, here's the thing, Mike. Russo's argument, even as backwards as it is, in and of itself is not the problem. But there needs to be somebody there to say, wait a minute. Hold on. See, nobody. You need somebody to literally and figuratively put it this way. You always use the Hasselbeck Carter moment, where Hasselbeck, you know, basically said, you know, and he basically said, name me 30 quarterbacks better, and you know, therein lies the problem, because see. When you always hear folks talk about good TV and all the other stuff, to me, you know, there's put this way, there's arguing, and then there's just dumb stuff. Now, look, to me, there is no better place, and I think all of us can identify. There is no better place where a true argument with some meat, potatoes, and maybe a little cauliflower, depending on your system, then the barbershop.
Amen.
Then the barbershop.
You can
shut
up quick.
Yes.
Tony, when we were coming up, when I was coming, kid, you couldn't say nothing. You hear me? You couldn't say nothing.
There was a pecking order. There was a pecking order, and see, we literally got folks in the bathroom yelling while everybody's in the classroom.
That's right. Tell young blood to shut up. He ain't really talking about.
Yeah.
You know.
Guys, Tony, remember the Richard Pryor routine?
Yes.
In his act?
Yeah.
That was real.
Let me go get the book.
That's right. Let me go get the book.
I've seen that.
There's no player that personifies what Richard Pryor was talking about better than Cameron Newton. You know, Cam has played his ass off. He defied the haters when he came into the league. And from 2011 until 2015, he improved. 2015 became an MVP. An MVP, that means nobody was better than him. And then they fucked with him. They didn't fuck him at the drive-thru. They fucked him in the locker room. And why it may not have been the same scene from the longest yard, I believe in my heart and soul. They told him to fold like a cheap fucking suit, and he did.
And he hasn't been
right
since.
And
he hasn't been right since.
That's right. And he was told after a penalty that should have been done on him wasn't called. They won the game in spite of it. And
oh,
he
no,
was
no,
told,
no. You can't get that call. You're too young
you
to get that call.
You can't get that call.
And,
you're too young
and
to get that call.
If you see this thing about black athletes, black athletes have to have a strong will. I mean, strong will. Because
that wasn't
you
the problem.
You know, you get crushed.
That wasn't the problem. That wasn't the problem, Gary. He had a strong enough will because as he was going through that playoffs and he was in front of his camera, he told us.
I know.
I'm just saying, as he was speaking to those microphones, he said, "I'm a strong, proud black man, and I'm just being myself." And somebody somewhere
and
they said, "You got to get his black ass because we can't have that. We can't have that kind of machismo. We can't have that much blackness. Is that too much blackness for one man to have?"
And Mike, he had already basically had a spoonful of it just in them years in Gainesville, Blinn College.
That's right.
And then Auburn.
That's right.
Think of those three transitions. You know? Yeah. Did he do a silly mistake by stealing the laptop? Yeah, sure, I'll give you that. But does that mean that his career should be taken away from him?
Stop playing the game like that.
But no, some things you can't change. Sometimes a person can't stop being who they are. Fred, you've seen him more than anybody else on this thread. You've been up close and personal. Seen him on his good days, on his bad days. And you saw how they worked at the core of his black ass. Tell me as honestly as you can, and I know you will, has he been broken?
Most times that I've observed of his play over the years, even taking into consideration some of his quirkiness, shall we call it, the hair, you know, those interesting suits, in his shoes and that kind of stuff, you know. Some of that stuff, you know, hurts him, but I don't think he understood. Because, you know, the one good thing they told him was don't get any tattoos. And for a long time, I don't know if he's ever gotten any, but I know for a long time, he didn't have any tattoos.
Right.
It was about marketability. And go along to get along and those things. But after so long, they did such things as they never, you know, in those last years he was a starter, he never had a good line. You had Steve Smith and receiver, but everybody else was rookies of the law or rookie quality. But as far as him, he shows a lot of signs of a broken knee. The last time he seemed to stand up for himself, when he was at the Super Bowl and he got up and walked out, that was the start of Brooklyn Campbell's back.
Yeah.
I want to follow up something on what Fred is saying in terms of being broken. More being broken, being in a situation to where. And it was put together this week, and I heard on with Keyshawn and Jay Williams this week, and it was very well said. The aspect of black quarterbacks, they were trying to compare black quarterbacks, and people were dogging Russell Wilson because of how he comes off, you know.
Yeah.
And what they were saying, what Jay Williams was saying, that it's wrong that people do that because that's who Russell Wilson is. Because his profile, his background, his family, that's how it comes off. He said now, and they start to break down other quarterbacks. He said, if you look at black quarterbacks tend to look at things and define what they want differently by one word.
Thank
swag.
You. That's exactly right.
They love
yep.
to have swag because that's who we are, you know.
Yep.
And as opposed to other white quarterbacks, where their statue is put together by what's acceptable, what's comfortable with the masses of the people who they represent and look like. So with that in mind, the bottom of Fred said, and then, you know, they broke Cam because they want Cam to be like everybody else. Yeah.
Right.
And Cam wasn't going to be that way.
No. You yeah. have to be who you are. And I like the point that you made about Russell because Russell grew up in a military family. He had a certain mentality to him. And I've seen other people who grew up in the military have a similar mentality. So Russell did everything that he did because it was built inside him. I call him General Wilson not because he was great on the field. That's because how he handled his business. And personally, same thing happened to him that happened to Robert Griffin III. They're both military background. They were both told they were corny to some degree. Well, you know what? Russell's got a fine-ass wife. That's not bad for corny. And say what you want about Robert Griffin. Griffin played well enough to be an offensive rookie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
He had his career co-opted by a cracker in Washington, D.C. We know that. But the whole point is one has to be who one is. And you can't deviate from that. If anything, you should revel in it. And that's why
absolutely.
They can't stand these brothers, because in spite of the outside pressure, in spite of the created drama, they still succeed. And they play well. You can still make the argument that Russell, until last year, had more victories than Tom Brady did. Oh, shit, that old nasty-ass Nate McKinnon struck again.
As far as frankly, Michael, follow what you said, I got to get Robert Griffin some dap for you doing great in the booth and football and in track.
Yes. I like the way he analyzes stuff. It's really good.
He is good, but he was good before.
He really is.
He's just showing that other side of his personality. Unfortunately, he has a form in which he can do that. That's a lot differently than, say, Eldridge Dickey, who never got the opportunity to show the world how good he was in spite of the fact that he was kicking Kent Stabler's ass in Raider camp. Now, if Kent Stabler was a Hall of Famer, to go to Patrick's point, how good could Eldridge Dickey have been had he been given the opportunity to just be the starter?
Why did he go to Canada?
So he could play.
Well, why should he have to? I can make the argument why should he have to.
The Raiders
made him their first choice. They knew how good he was. They saw how good he was. Al Davis ain't shit because of what he did to Eldridge Dickey.
And quite frankly, my man Jefferson Street, Joe, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Joe,
yes, indeed.
But a lot of guys had issues. That's Bobby Lane. Don't get me started.
Yes.
And mothers.
How about that?
You know.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But the point is, if you don't follow that line of a straight and narrow on projecting that make people come. That's on my list of people. So my final thoughts you'll hear about when I say it. You know, they want the quarterback to be a CEO and project like a CEO in which they're comfortable with.
Come on. That's right. It's the It's the duplicity that bothers me. Why bother to draft me if you're not going to utilize me? Why look at the film and say, look what this guy can do, and then choke him like a fucking chicken about to be cooked and wringing his neck because he's the wrong color? I hate shit like that. And I hate motherfuckers that come off half-assed because of it. Yes.
And Mike, guess what? You want to see a prime example of it? That's right now. Unfortunately, I've been too busy at the station doing some, doing some stuff. I can't get out and do what I want to do.
Yeah.
But watch and watch how now more than ever how they build up and present because he has the profile what they want. Zach Wilson of the Jets.
Oh,
they've been doing it already.
Hey.
Yeah.
Number two pick overall, automatic white boy.
But hey,
Patrick. But Patrick, here's my question, Patrick. Now, everybody's still mad because Deshaun Watson spoke. And if I got 26 people hollering at me and I got that fat ass contract, do you think maybe legally he should just say no comment? I mean, sometimes when you're on investigations, it's best to keep your mouth shut.
I agree with you.
And that New York Times article didn't help either.
But at this point, there are more people around him that can do that, to help with that. That's something that between his lawyers and the people. And you see, what every team has, guys, every pro team has, they have people. They have consultants relative to PR and crisis consultants. I know one of the best ones is a brother on each team to guide players and individuals to kind of craft to get through this stuff. Sometimes people step out and you can't help them because they mess up so much, i.e., Jack Del Rio. But anyway,
Don't get me dirty.
But the point is, they all have crisis managers, and the craft what the guy says or what if he doesn't follow that line, really, Watson's been relatively quiet in my mind. What's going on? And I said before, if it's been pointed out, if he did 66 women or contact 66 women, and the team knew about it, well,
thank you. You paid your money, you take your chances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I said, he was okay until he wanted to get his money. All of a sudden, it comes out that 24 women. I'm not disgracing women, but ain't that a coincidence?
Hey,
come on,
Patrick. Wilt Chamberlain on line two. Wilt Chamberlain on line two. Only 26.
Yeah, that's
cool, Rich.
I had that in one hour. That's a light.
Wilt Chamberlain said he had that in 1 hour.
That's a light lunch for Mr. Chamberlain, apparently.
they call him the Big Dipper for a reason. That's why he's doing the Big Dipper.
he was dipping and dabbing.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Mike, why you think his house is like an airport? he was landing.
Before we get to final thoughts, I must ask this. I've been asking it all day because I got barbecue on my mind. Now, this is an important question.
Just to eat some
macaroni salad with or without tuna fish. Potato salad with or without egg.
Without.
Which one?
If you want enough gas put in your car, eat some eggs.
That's why you got infants.
Erica Badu on line two with Sage. Erica Badu on line two.
And please don't ask her to use her phone. Why? No.
Oh no! And don't say nothing about
Tyrone. Give her a window seat when she's flying. Give her a window seat.
And don't say nothing about Tyrone. Please don't say nothing about Tyrone.
All right. Final thoughts.
Mike, I'm just saying, what, I don't know anything else but eggs with pizza. That's all.
There you go.
Anyway.
But please do not put raisins in it. Don't put the raisins.
That's right.
No raisins.
Don't start that raisin.
As Black Panther would say, oh, hell no, Sheila. No, no, Karen, no.
Yes, indeed.
As Eddie Murphy said, Eddie, we need raisins, Eddie.
That's probably the biggest laugh that Saturday Night Live's had in the last 15 years.
No shit. Want to record macaroni with tuna?
Oh, hell no, Karen.
Yeah. Don't nobody know nothing when it comes to potato salad and raisins. I'm sorry. How dare you?
Had to get that in, T-Mac. How dare you have raisins at the table?
Half Reggie. Okay, Reggie, time for final thoughts. Set it off, brother.
I'm still trying to figure out how in the hell is 45 walking around free. It just amazed me again that this Justice Department. This Justice Department is just us. I mean, it just amazes me that these clowns show them on TV doing reconnaissance, and it's like they immune to everything. I mean, these guys are better than Dillinger, man. I mean, some are Teflon. America, don't tell me a fucking thing about how great and you promise. I looked at the first lady and Viola Davis, God bless her soul, but she got smoked over the grill about her portrayal of Michelle Obama. First of all, they say, what's wrong with your lips, girl? Why are you doing your face expression? What are you trying to do? And it's really sad, again, that they take so much liberties off these movies that they make a great actor look sad. Just my thought.
Good point.
Pre-Deco O'Malley.
That's right. Patrick?
A situation came up earlier today, looking at some things, and someone had made put a picture of some player, and I said in that comment about the player, one of the best, you know, one of the most underrated football players ever, and I said yes, ever, in the National Football League, because of the fact that he was a black man that didn't go for the bullshit in the NFL, because he was not going to make people feel comfortable at his expense. That is great. Dwayne Thomas.
Yes.
Evidently.
Yes, sir. even Jim Brown couldn't make him capitulate when he got in front of the camera. He told Jim Brown, kiss my ass, man. I ain't capitulating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's the only man
that could disarm a whole white media contingent with one word.
Yes, Lord. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I think people forget how really talented he was because Landry wanted him to succeed. Landry really wanted him to succeed. And
he
yet,
was rookie of the year.
Yeah.
Here's the crazy thing. If you really sit back and look at it, look, he wanted all of his players to be robotic.
Yeah.
And in a sense, Dwayne Thomas was the perfect guy for that because he's a great player. He was robotic in the sense where he just, he didn't say much. He just came or whatever. He literally let his plan go on the field. And I think that's why he gave him, in a sense, as much leeway till even he couldn't, whatever anymore. And it's too bad,
I think
too, because, well, see, think about, you know, think, think about all the great runners that the Cowboys have had over the years. And to me, and to me, all of them steal from the original 33. Perkins, Don Perkins had the speed. Tony Dorsett had the moves. Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, see, I'm just saying in the history in the history of the Cowboys, when you think of all their great runners, they all have an aspect of Dwayne Thomas in them. And because Thomas, if he wanted to, could have caught 60, 70 balls out of the backfield if they would have. The thing that was always funny to me was that you always had folks that said, "Oh, Calvin Hill's so much of a better ball player than Dwayne Thomas." But again, playing into that hole because he went to Yale. Now, no disrespect to Calvin Hill. Calvin Hill, great ball player, no doubt. But see, that's the problem. They always have to have an underlier to it. And I apologize for speaking out of turn.
No, I
agree,
Tony. And Tony, let me back it up, Tony, with what you said. For years in covering the Cowboys, every time the Cowboys came to Giant Stadium, I always got a heads up and a wink at each other. Calvin Hill as an executive with the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes.
I looked at him. He looked at me every year. He came in.
And
Hollywood actually exposed them. Tony, Hollywood actually exposed them in North Dallas 40.
North Dallas 40.
Because they talked about how robotic their offense was and how they programmed X people to score. But the bottom line, Thomas was no robot. And I think Landry actually liked that. But those two things did not mix with what the Cowboy front office wanted. I think had they left him the fuck alone, Dwayne Thomas would have been a great football player who played there a long time.
Absolutely. But see, think about it. They wanted him, the biggest thing they wanted him to do more than anything else was conform.
Yes.
And it's like, really? You would rather go basically 6-8 just to see him conform?
Haven't you observed white folks long enough to know they would rather lose on one hand just to get you into the bracket that they want you to be in?
Pretty much.
That's so true. Good one, Patrick, for recognizing number 33. The original 33, by the way. Professor, come on with it.
Well, first, while we talk about 33, I noticed on a film the other night of the other 33 playing, and I just kind of noticed on one play he stuck the ball in somebody's face, and after a couple of hits, he got up and walked directly back to the huddle and didn't say nothing to nobody. So I figured they got what they wanted out of him. Also, about the receivers and so forth from the Raiders. Well, since they're the Raiders and I'm still a fan, I just left it alone, and I'm going to leave it alone now. Having said that, you know, I write about a lot of people and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm also believing in giving shine where it shines should be. And we have a young man here in North Carolina named Lavelle Moten. Class. I remember him as a little knot-kneed freshman who was one of the biggest claim to fame, really,
in college was he was one of the ones on the last team that beat Big House. And solid young man. He's broken home, raised by his mother and grandmother. They moved from Yankee country down south to get him away from a lot of stuff. But he's a tribute to HBCU coaches, HBCU former players, and these are people that we have to keep out on Front Street because, if you want to do an interview with him, Mike, that would be one I would do. Was LaVell Moore at North Carolina Central, head coach at North Carolina Central basketball. My funny story with him was right after he got the job, he and the AD were sitting in the stands. So I went up and spoke to him, and the whole time I was there, I was making jokes about him and how he played and how she should never have hired a coach with a good jump shot. He sat there, and when I would get to him, he would kind of move his hands or change his feet or something. But he was always so cool, and he has exemplified. He had an exemplary career as head coach at Central, to include four MEAC championships, and three of them were consecutive. But you know, these are the kind of people you need to keep out front. LaVell Moton, North Carolina Central. And he's highlighted. Uh-huh. He is highlighted as a player and coach in the upcoming book, which should be in the mail back to us by this time next week.
Fred, let me add that, North Carolina Central, I visited that school. It's 10-1 women to men. Lord, have mercy.
Come on, Jack. Dang. Well, let's
give Mr. Moses
some love.
Let's
make arrangements for
him. Gary, you have no more eligibility, Gary. No, sorry. I hear the little things going on in your head there. I'm like, nope.
Y'all gonna watch G. If you hear somebody was victim of a roll by North Carolina Central, you better go back up to El Camino because I know who did it.
Mm-hmm.
Mike G stands for gangster.
Damn.
For real? That's
if
right.
You
G
hear,
stands for gangster.
If you hear noise, it's a me and the boy.
Professional. Let's set something up for next month and get Mr. Mosley on because he sounds like somebody worthy of an interview. I'd love to talk to him. So
absolutely.
Oh, by the way, Mike, all of y'all that are daddy, happy Father's Day.
Yes, sir.
Yep, sir.
Happy Father's Day.
Yep, and in the words of Ralph Kiner, for all you fathers out there, happy Mother's Day.
Oh, Lord. Gary. Come on,
yes,
with
sir.
It, kid. What you got?
Okay, this week at SIU, this winter, at SIU, there will be two numbers retired. Joe C. Merriweather.
Yeah. Oh, God, I remember him.
And Clyde Frazier, as a three.
About time.
Remember,
Roundtree.
Yeah.
Went to FIU?
The great deacon of political satire and comedy, Dick Gregory.
Oh, yeah. Papa Gregory. That's
wow.
Right. He did go there.
That's a good
Mike, them two bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
We can't give you Shaft because Richard Roundtree got that. Maybe we can change your nickname to Shift.
All right, guys. Don't play with
it. There you go.
All right.
I am so jealous. Y'all having too much fun. I'm so jealous.
Big T, what you got for it?
A news out of Connecticut. I know. Stop yawning.
Is it Thursday yet?
No, not yet. Nah. It's no martial law, thank goodness. But the board of the WWE is investigating a secret $3 million settlement that CEO Vince McMahon agreed to pay to a former employee over an alleged affair, according to a Wall Street Journal report on Wednesday. Now, the agreement, which was signed in January, is meant to prevent the now former employee from discussing her relationship with McMahon or making any disparaging comments about him, according to the journal. Now, email sent to WWE board members in March indicates that the 76-year-old McMahon, God, 70, that's all, hired the then former staffer, who was 41, on a $100,000 salary and then gave her a raise to $200,000 after the start of her alleged sexual relationship with her. The report
it ain't fake, it's real.
Well, yes and no.
Is this fuzzy math T? What's up?
All I can say is Poontang Pie makes a lot more sense to me now in regards to all of that.
Gives a whole new meaning. Wait, Tony,
I smell some. Was she black?
Yeah. I don't know.
Like that brown
sugar
boy, I tell you, may go crazy. That brown sugar.
But let's put it this way: to go from $100,000 to $200,000,
probably.
To quote Chris Rock, I'm not saying he did it, but I sure do understand.
He went from steel cage to hell in himself. No shit.
Black he did.
Yeah, really. Nah, yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, see, Cleopatra.
Look at Linda McMahon and then you tell me.
put it this way. Reggie, thank you. Now I'm going to sleep till 4 a.m.
Yeah,
now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That Black Forest, the former president, Commission Hope from Word One. 1, 2, 3. Your ass is out.
Ow!
Brings new meaning to the corporate clutch. That's all. That's all I can say.
That's right. Everybody loves a good owl. Shit. Anyway, picnic and dialogue notwithstanding, I say farewell to my friends here, my colleagues, for putting some good food in the pot. Everybody, please, if you're out there working and traveling, go stay safe, be safe. Happy birthday again to my sister-in-law, Rini. I love you, sis, and I hope that you had a good day.
Yep.
I will talk to you later. Everybody else?
Come on, everybody clap your hands, what's up? Come on, clap your hands, clap your hands, come on, just clap your hands, clap your hands, everybody just hear yourself. Come on, everybody go side to side, keep going, come on.
Mama said, don't you crack and smoke. kiddo. Consider making nose grow like Pinocchio. Since I was only 15, I had to listen to what was said from my parents who were Christian. I went to school and saw all my friends do it, but I said no, cause I ain't want my nose to grow. They started tripping on me, buzzing and flipping on me, so I had to run and say, yo, keep stepping on me. I started smoking to prove I'm an adult. Now it's a habit, but is it all my fault? I wish my mother had told me the truth, cause now I'm all based out on dope.
Everybody rise as I present to a jet black crowd what it's like to be black and proud in a world where white is right, but not tonight. This is a black man's mic. I heard a sister say she don't like darker shades of black on a man, cause that's black. But to my light skin sister, can't you tell? She's just the surface of a dark deep well. And how could you prefer to be with those that spray you with guns and hoses and never put roses on the graves of the slaves that they treated like dirt after all that hard work? Last night she had to stop because the baby was crying. She threw it on the phone all alone with a smile. Run the water, grab the shower cap and get fucked wild. Soap suds on the floor, ooh, I'll be sure. Give it to me, give it to me, give me a little more. I'm fiending, screaming, screaming, screaming. What else? The girl possessed by the baby.
Like the men.